worry, no sweets. Only ripe vegetables, fresh fruit and whole wheat. I'm from the old school. My household smell like soul food, bruh. Curry falafel.
What's up, Beardos? Welcome to episode 19 of The Bearded Vegans. I'm Paul.
And I'm Andy.
And we are The Bearded Vegans, a podcast featuring a dissection of all things vegan.
If you're just tuning in for the very first time, you could find all of our previous episodes on the Commentist Network, which can be found at thecommentist.com. And you can reach us by emailing thebeardedvegans@gmail.com. And you can always connect with us and follow our food adventures on Instagram at thebeardedvegans.
In today's episode, we're going to introduce a new segment called What's the Deal with Vegans? And conclude with an in-depth review of the new movie, Racing Extinction. Newish, right?
It's new.
Like a month. It's new. I'm keeping new in there. Don't edit that out. So for this new segment, something Andy found that was really grinding his gears.
My gears are ground down to nubs.
let's get into it. What happened?
So, I was on Instagram, as I've been known to do, and you can follow ours at The Bearded Vegans, and I was looking at Mercy for Animals Instagram, and they just posted something that said, how to eat vegan at Taco Bell, and they said, try the fresco bean burrito or the seven-layer burrito without cheese and sour cream, and simple enough, right? Oh, this is some nice information for the vegan that's on the road or is just likes Taco Bell. Who cares if you want to eat Taco Bell, right? If you want to eat vegan at Taco Bell, this is an easy way to do it. And then I went and looked at the now 199 comments.
Never a good idea.
and by far the most prevalent comment is, Paul, you saw it. There's one in all caps. You want to recite it for me?
Yes, let me find it. It says, okay, well, there's one comment that says, I know that their refried beans are baked in animal fat and not vegetarian even. Is the fresco style different, or do they have vegetarian refried beans? Immediately followed by another comment that just says, yes, please, I'd like to know also, is there lard in the beans? And I've vocally accented the parts that were in caps because it was just half of the comment that's in caps.
There are a dozen or so people asking, is there lard in the beans? Are the beans vegan? Followed in second place by people saying, but I'm sure the tortilla is not vegan. The tortilla is definitely not vegan. And so this right here is my biggest pet peeve, because the sentence that you are typing into Instagram, are the beans vegan? You could type into Google instead and actually get an answer.
Which I just did.
So the thing is, the internet's your friend. Google is your friend. For the love of God, please, Google shit. Don't scream at the internet ever. It's the worst thing ever. And so here's the thing. Mercy for Animals, I know a lot of people don't like that they're a welfareist organization, but they are a vegan organization. They're not just going to throw something up on the internet without making sure that it's vegan. So that should be like hint one that it's vegan. And if that's not good enough for you, you go to TacoBell.com. You can look at the nutrition information. And in fact, it'll give you the ingredients for the tortilla. And if that's not good enough for you, at the very end of the ingredients, it says certified vegan. Says that same thing after the beans. It says it after the goddamn tomato and the lettuce. It says certified vegan. So I don't know why all these people are on there going, well, I have a cousin that worked at Taco Bell and he swears that the beans are not. No, use the internet. It's your friend. I've never been so worked up on this show. I saw this a week ago and I just made a note of it. And looking at it again makes me so angry. It's just use Google. People do this all the time. You don't need to post on Facebook asking a question when you could ask Google that question. Yes. And get your answer. And like, people do that and I'm just, you know, they'll ask me questions through any of the various social media that I run. And I'm just like, if I didn't answer this question, would you just die not knowing the answer? Would you eventually realize you could go online and find the answer you seek? Oh my God. What's up with that? So that's like one of the responses. And then of course you get the typical, but GMOs and that's not healthy. And we were talking all about health in the last episode, which we recorded like an hour ago. So we're all loopy right now. But It's so counterproductive. It's like, if people want to eat Taco Bell, if people are going to eat fast food, won't you want to help them eat their vegan?
Yeah.
Like telling someone all of a sudden, go cook a fresh meal at home instead, when maybe that's not the situation they're in. It's not helpful to anyone.
And I don't think most people are going to Taco Bell anyways, thinking that it's like this super fresh. I mean, maybe some people do, but it's just like unnecessary to I don't know. It just seems like people needing to be like, oh, someone's trying to like put something in a positive light. I need to crush that down immediately and bring in something that I can like argue about with it.
Yeah, it's Paul, you sound unreasonably calm right now. And I get, like, we've talked about the merits of supporting non-vegan places before, and I get it. If like you don't want to do it, that's fine. You don't have to. But you just need to see what an organization that's trying to get people off of eating animals is trying to do, and the benefit of promoting the fact that there are vegan options at a mainstream fast food restaurant. Mm-hmm. And I also even saw someone say, hey, you should do this for other fast food restaurants because it'd be great because I travel all the time. It's like, again, the internet is your friend. All of this information is available to you. There's even apps that you can download that tell you all this information. So
I think that's a more reasonable request. Because it's not like, it's not trying to like break someone. It's not trying to take what they posted and be like, no, you can't do that. It's not trying to do that, you know? It's just being like, oh, hey, this is helpful. Keep doing that.
I guess, Paul, stop being so reasonable. You're being unreasonably reasonable right now. But everything you want to know, I'll see people post like, oh, I went to this city, I ate at this vegan place, and be like, oh, you should tell me about more places in that city. And I'm like, Happy Cow exists. Like, I don't know. Yeah,
but just because a place is vegan doesn't mean you would automatically recommend it. You know, some places stink.
I know. But it's, I don't know. It just seems like people are unwilling to do the legwork to find out very basic things, and they expect other people to do it for them.
I suppose.
Stop being lazy. It's not like I don't want to have people to have conversation and like have recommendations for each other, but it just feels
like we did in the first episode of this podcast.
Yeah, it just feels like when people are screaming into the void and expecting other people to literally just go Google something for them that they could have done themselves. I don't know. I thought we were living in a society here.
It is one of my favorite like internet memes when you send them that link that just Google something. Google that for you.
All right. That's all I have to say about the matter. But come on, vegans. We can do better than that.
All right. Whew.
All right. Let's move on.
Now that we've alienated half of our listeners, probably.
All right. Let's move on into this week's review of Racing Extinction.
What's happening now is unprecedented in Earth's history.
Why would we want to disrupt something that took billions of years to evolve?
We need to fight it on all fronts.
I think it's dawning on us now that this is the big one.
OPS is a group I formed. It uses covert operations to expose harmed endangered species.
We're doing an order here. One bottle cam.
Right there's the lens.
Two buttonhole cameras.
Check 1, 2.
Oh, that's good.
Just about everything endangered in the world is for sale in China.
Look at this stuff. Endangered, highly endangered, highly endangered.
The more illegal it is, the more you have to go to the back rooms.
We're definitely not welcome here.
Oh my gosh!
There's things going on that are probably not safe to talk about.
I am so excited to talk about this. Immediately after, like literally while the credits were still rolling, I turned to Andy and said, I want to watch that again. Immediately.
All right. So before we get into it, let me
No. I'm already into it. You can't stop me.
We're deep in it right now. All right. Let me just set the scene for everybody. From Amazon.com, where you can buy the film. You can't rent it there. We happen to stream it through the Xbox for free.
We have a on demand Xfinity. I don't know. It's magic.
The reason this film is on our radar is because all the big vegan groups were promoting it because it was going to be airing on the Discovery Channel. Otherwise, I don't know if it's something that would have really come across my dashboard.
I actually, it came across my dashboard on my car dashboard. When I heard it on the radio.
Was it projected?
Well, that was an inside joke for people that have already seen the movie.
So anyway, from Amazon.com, Racing Extinction is an eco-thriller that examines mankind's role in mass extinction. Academy Award-winning documentary filmmaker Louis... Oh, boy. This last name. Sihoyos? Joins scientists, environmentalists, artists, and engineers to draw attention to this pressing issue.
Yeah, so I heard about this. They were advertising it on the radio, like in a morning talk show. Not advertising, they're just talking about it the night that it was going to be aired. So it seems like, and I mean, it was on the Discovery Channel anyways, so it seems like it was getting like a decent amount of hype, which is really nice.
Yeah, and and so yeah, the film follows Louis, who is a filmmaker, and sort of a lot of the film is kind of centered around filming and photographing endangered species and sort of drawing attention to their plight and ways to do that. And we'll talk about what the film gets into, and you know, it should be said, spoilers, we're not going to hold back anything.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If you haven't seen it, you should just go see it. I'll say right off the bat that we'd both recommend it, but what's your initial impression of the film?
Well, I was also going to say, like, unlike something like Plant Pure Nation, it's like this movie, I would say watch it before we start talking about it, because even though it seems like it's not the type of movie where you would have things spoiled, it's just like a very exciting movie to watch. So I would say watch it first before you listen to us, or you can completely ignore me and keep listening to it.
Or watch the film on mute while you listen to
us. Yeah, that'll be the better one, the best option. So my initial reaction to it, right off the bat, it starts off with like this group of people attaching hidden cameras to themselves, and they're doing a raid on a seafood restaurant that's been serving whale and other like exotic endangered animals. And so like right off the bat, you're like, whoa, it's like some James Bond spy stuff. It just like kind of captures you right away. It's exciting. It's a documentary, but it's like you're actually excited for what's going on.
I turned to Paul in like the first 30 seconds and was like, this is already way better than Plant Pure Nation. Just immediately, my attention was captured. But.
And I mean, it should definitely be said that the production value of this was like through the roof, and like the juxtaposition of literally, like Andy said, we had watched Plant Pure Nation 4 hours ago, and then we just watched Racing Extinction, and like the difference just between, like, there were probably millions and millions of more dollars spent on Racing Extinction. And it shows, because it's just, everything is beautifully shot. Everything is beautifully edited. Like, the timing of everything is perfect. It's just visually a very, very beautiful, well put together film. Not even getting into the topics of what it talks about. It's just visually very, very enjoyable to look at.
It's absolutely captivating. Mm-hmm. The production value alone. Like, honestly, if you did listen without the sound, it would still be an incredibly enjoyable experience.
Yeah.
But
yeah. What's up? What's up, Annie?
Hey, how's it going? I wanted to continue to get your initial impressions of the film before we pick it apart.
Yeah. So it I think mentioned. I mean, this is a podcast about veganism. It mentioned the word vegan maybe once or twice. It was not heavy on telling you this is what you should do, which, you know what I'm going to say, like, for what this movie was trying to do, maybe that's it. Maybe it didn't need that, but we can talk about that too. But it was the kind of focal point of the movie was that, like, our existence, humanity's existence, is putting animals at risk of extinction for many, many reasons, one of them being our consumption of them, but not the only reason. So it didn't really push veganism or vegetarianism. At the end, there is something that says, like, eat more plants. But other than that, and I mean, even though it doesn't say it, it's implying, like, hey, stop eating shark fin soup, stop consuming these endangered animals. But it's not really saying, like, stop eating. A lot of it's not saying stop eating all animals. It's saying stop eating, like, these endangered animals, which is obviously important. It's important to stop eating the endangered animals. But I think that's don't know. What did you think? I thought that that's more so the point that it was trying to make rather than stop eating all animals. It was saying like, hey, these specific species are going extinct. Stop eating these species.
Yeah, I would say that the film kind of lets people off the hook in terms of eating animals, even though they kind of pay a little lip service to the fact that, you know, it, as we were watching the film, I was going, like, I wonder why so many of these vegan organizations were promoting it, even though obviously it's against animal cruelty.
Yeah.
But it's sort of not the focus on farmed animals, which is increasingly the focus of mainstream vegan organizations. And then they started to drop in some shots of, you know, larger farming operations, and they talked about how much greenhouse gases come from the cows. And how they, you know, can measure how much methane comes from cows and how much, you know, worse that is for the environment than CO2. Mm-hmm. And I had seen, they have footage of cows that have like the holes in their side, and I had seen pictures of that before, but they had like a camera zoom right in there, and they showed some operation where they're actually collecting the methane coming from the cow directly from one of those holes, and that was just very bizarre to see.
Yeah.
But before we really get into it, I'll just say my initial impression was that it's I'm really happy to be talking about a film that we're both kind of excited about.
Yeah.
Even though we both really liked Cowspiracy, and I said in our, you know, last week's episode, aka a couple hours ago, that Cowspiracy is a beautiful film, which it is, but this one is just mesmerizing to watch.
And again, I think that has to do with just like the fact that it's a Discovery Channel movie, whereas Cowspiracy, Plant Pure Nation are like independent movies.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's like, it's awesome.
But that, I mean, for better or worse, that stuff really matters in terms of getting the audience that you want. I don't think for the most part anything I can really think of visually and production value wise that Cowspiracy was lacking, where I would watch it and be like, ooh, I don't know if I'd really want to show this to everyone, whereas Plant Pure was kind of like, eh. But this one, it was just like, this is something I would want to go home and just show it to my parents right away and just be like, this is so cool. And there's just amazing underwater photography. There's footage of these, of like the life in microorganisms and plankton and deep sea animals.
They're using cameras to capture CO2, like, it's just like stuff you've never seen before.
Yeah. There's definitely, like you said, a lot of James Bond, like just spy stuff. So,
and spoiler alert, there's literally a part where there's a car that has a license plate, which like, gets like shaded over when they need to run away from the police.
So it's just, I learned stuff from the film and maybe I learned less from vegan films because it's something that I'm typically pretty well informed on, but I just like learned things in this film that I just had no idea. I saw things I'd never seen before, and I would just, you know, highly recommend that people watch it just for those aspects alone. But yeah, as far as what the message of the thing is, that I might have some qualms with. Mm-hmm. So the film sort of places the most importance on oceans and talks about, well, this plankton produces 50% of our oxygen, I think it said. Which I had no idea. So that's a huge thing. And talks about how, you know, if the oceans die, we die, that type of thing. And something that I did think was really cool in the film was just one kind of throwaway line where someone's like, you can't pick one issue. You have to fight all of them on all fronts. So that kind of is something you see vegans doing a lot, where it's like, well, it's okay that I drive this car because I'm a vegan, so I offset my carbon footprint by so much more than someone who drives a car, which on some level is like, it's a lot easier to, or like for some people, having a car is much more of a necessity than animal products. But it's like, oh, well, we should be going vegan and work on driving less or switching to bikes or walking and stuff like that. But it was only like 40 minutes in when they had the shots of animal agriculture, talk about the impact as on the environment, and then talks about how horrible eating, you know, animals is for mm-hmm. the planet. And then it goes right back to all the ocean stuff. And it's not until the very end where they have that one line that's like, you should eat more plants.
Yeah.
And it just, I understand the benefit of doing that because you know, people are so touchy about veganism and all that stuff. But it's like, the film felt like two or three different things that it was trying to be. Mm. And so much of it focuses on these rare and, you know, extinct or about to be extinct animal trade happening in China. I think it was primarily yeah. China. And that's like, so it focused on the individual, like, cultures killing animals specifically, like shark fin soup mm-hmm. and manta rays. But then it also talked about the overall environmental stuff.
Yeah.
And I guess because the film said you can't just pick one, that's why they're trying to show all of it. But it felt like they never really connected the two. And it felt like they spent so much time on this very exciting footage of them exploring and sneaking into these facilities where there's like thousands of shark fins being mm-hmm. laid out in the sun. And both Paul and I were like, holy shit.
Yeah, it was like a really powerful scene.
Just breathtaking. And yeah. it's also very exciting because they're like, if anyone with a badge comes up, like, you should throw your camera over the fence yeah. and, you know, just stuff. You're like, you really feel the stakes of what's mm-hmm. going on, which is something that Plant Pure didn't really do very well. It never instilled a sense of like danger or urgency mm-hmm. in what they were doing. But all of that focus for a film that's going to be shown, I'm assuming primarily to American audiences, on look at these horrible things that people halfway around the world are doing. Mm-hmm. It runs the risk of, you know, the campaigns that are like anti-dog meat campaigns yeah. and just sort of lets American audiences go, oh, look at those barbarians doing these horrible yeah. things. And so the fact that it only has these two kind of almost throwaway moments of talking about animal agriculture, it made me feel like it was a missed opportunity. You know, while at the same time just absolutely loving everything that I was yeah. seeing and just being totally wrapped up in the story.
Yeah. Can I say something?
Go for it.
So I like almost wouldn't call this like a vegan movie because I think that I don't think that that's one of their goals. That was one of their goals. Even if they, I don't know if they are vegan or not, or vegetarian or vegan or not. I don't think that was their goal. And I think that it's very obvious that the people involved in the film and like the main character and a bunch of the main people, they are like very passionate about sea life and particularly sharks and mantas. And I think because they are so passionate about especially those two species, they wanted to focus, like they wanted to put a lot of attention on that kind of stuff. And because even though there are like horrendous things happening to animals in the United States, not as much shark and manta hunting in the United States. So it just happens that it's in China and I think Indonesia was the mantas. And I don't think I would hope this was not their intention, but like you said, the result of that is you can say like, oh, those people are doing that. Like, thank goodness, like we don't hunt. Like mantis and stuff like that. And I mean, even though it's the, was the restaurant in the beginning of the movie? Do you remember where that was? Was that in the United States?
I don't remember.
I feel like it was in the United States. And I remember like, a few years ago there was that, was it on MTV? That kind of like undercover investigation about like the horse meat industry.
I don't.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
I feel like it was on MTV. It's that organization. I think it's ARM, A-R-M. Yeah, Animal Recovery Mission. I think...
Hump was located in Santa Monica, California.
Okay, yeah. So it's like it wasn't. The movie starts out in the United States. And they could have gone into the kind of the illegal horse meat or slaughter industry that does happen in the United States. Like, that would have been... I feel like that would have been... a nice connection because I mean, like I said, I don't think this is like a, it's not a, it's not like a vegan movie. It's not showing chickens, cows being slaughtered. It's not showing the animals that are, I would say, the most common. It's showing like the exotic animals, which is the point of the movie. So something like showing horses being killed, I think, would have elicited the same response as the sharks and the mantas from an American audience. And then it's like, oh shit, this is happening like in the US, like we're doing this too.
Yeah.
That would have been, I think that would have been nice, because it's easy for people. It would be easy for people to watch this movie and be like, oh, that's happening over there. Like, I'm going to demonize those people.
Yeah. And I mean, part of me almost felt like they kind of included the little bits about animal agriculture just to prevent criticism, just to be like, and they do that a couple of times in the film where they sort of acknowledge something and then move beyond it without really addressing it. I'm thinking specifically of when the filmmaker talks about looking at the carbon footprint of making films. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I was kind of horrified to realize that over a year of shooting and especially flying everywhere, I'm assuming that's kind of the majority of their carbon footprint, because planes are notoriously bad, mm-hmm. With those emissions. And he's just like, making a documentary is horrible for the environment. Well, anyway, moving on from that, you know, it's almost like, I feel like you put that in there to deflect the criticism of that, to be like, no, we're aware of it. And I mean, me personally, it's like, I feel like the good that this documentary could do would vastly offset the bad they're doing by making the documentary. Mm-hmm. And obviously a lot of people wouldn't take that so reasonably. But it just kind of, it felt insincere for him to bring it up.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see how it would be. That's why he would be doing it. I didn't get as much of like the insincerity feeling. I got more of the purpose of that little, because it was like 2 minutes that he talked about that.
Yeah.
So you're right. It was very short. I got the purpose of that as him saying, which I think he says, like, he's like, we're like doing stuff that's affecting the environment literally all the time, like every single second, like existing, we're harming the environment. And it's in a lot of ways we never even think about, like, that's how what I got. But you're absolutely right that it could have very well been, he's just kind of saying that so that people can't critique him.
And I don't think that the filmmaker didn't care about that.
Yeah.
It just kind of felt really underexplored and just kind of put there because he felt like he had to acknowledge it. And, and the other moment that sticks out for being kind of like that is when he does say it's easy to look at China and go, oh, look what China's doing. But also in America, we do this.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, cool. And I think that's around the time when animal agriculture came in. Mm-hmm. But then after like 5 minutes, it was like, all right, now back to this small Indonesian village that their only source of income is manta ray fishing.
And again, I think it's like these guys that were working on it, that's what they're passionate about. Like, that's what they wanted to make the movie about.
Yeah.
And maybe they did just feel like they had to include some of this stuff. But maybe it was like, I don't know, maybe it came, obviously intentions aren't everything, but maybe it came from like a good place, like he didn't, like he was actively thinking like, oh, that people, if I release the film like this, that's what people are going to do. So it's like, even though I want to make the film about this, I'm going to include this other section about stuff that's happening in the United States. Yeah. This is me giving them the benefit of the doubt. But
yeah, I guess I just wish they kind of tried to drive that home more. Mm-hmm. And it's difficult. But again, you know, just kind of a little bit touched on that and Plant Pure, that sort of white savior complex.
Yeah.
Even though it's for the animals and not for like the, you know, people of color. And I felt it did feel conflicted because they talked about the community that was killing a lot of sharks, and then it got converted over to being a tourist industry, mm-hmm. where they would swim with the whale sharks.
Yeah.
And then they go to this small village in Indonesia, and they're meeting with sort of the big the head honchos of the village, and they're like, if you're here for conservation trip, then you know, you should know that we can't grow plants. we don't have this. Manta fishing is all we have. Mm-hmm. So, you know, unless you can provide us with an alternative, then it's kind of all we have. And later they do have someone, and I was like, oh, they're going to do an alternative. And their alternative suggestion that they never really explicitly stated it was, oh, turn this into a tourist area. And it's like, there's so many complicated things going on in the film where it's like, okay, is the solution to like turn this into a destination for like, you know, presumably white tourists to come in to this like exotic locale and swim with rays? Obviously it's better for the rays that they're not being killed, but it just, it's such a complicated thing because obviously I don't want those rays to be killed, but also it's like, feels very sort of imperialist or colonialist. And like, while at the same time being like, oh, it's so cool that they're doing these things. I just feel so conflicted when I watch it because it seemed to be lacking in exploring the nuances of the situation in a delicate way.
Yeah. I think that this topic, this conversation, which we should get into right now, is like, I think this is like the big thing about this movie that is kind of like, ooh, this should be the big debate about this movie because I will say off the bat, I think I do very much appreciate that they, right from the start when they go, not from when they first go into that Indonesian town, right at the beginning of that, they have the head honcho guy that says, like, this is like how we make our income. If we don't do this, then we have no income. And I think that they could have very easily made a movie that just like demonized the people and were like, oh, look at these terrible people. It's like this whole village is just killing these manta rays. So it's like I very much appreciate that they humanized the people and made a movie that wasn't just saying like the people that are killing these animals are the bad people. It's the movie, I think, did a good job of putting the blame on the people that are consuming them instead of the people that are just doing this because this is what they have to do to make a living.
Yeah.
And then, so I do appreciate that. But it's like bypassing this. So what ends up happening is, so this is towards like the middle of the movie, and then towards the end of the movie, they go to this endangered species conference and they successfully get the mantas on the endangered species list. This is how I understood it. And that effectively makes them illegal to kill. So it's like they've effectively made it illegal for this entire community to do what they need to do to survive, to make a living. Which when you put it that way is like kind of shitty. But if I literally just said to you, like out of any context, I said, hey, oh, hey, Andy, did you hear that like mantas are now on the endangered species list, which makes them like illegal to kill. You can't kill them anymore. You're like, yeah,
that's awesome.
A good thing.
Yeah.
But like you said, there's just like so many nuances to it. And it's like it just affects a whole bunch of different things. And again, I appreciate that they had an alternative solution to making money. But one, it's like, that's all that they had. So it's like, oh, here you go. Like, you can do this now. It's like, this is what you're going to do. And two, it doesn't go into whether or not it's successful. Obviously it might not have been enough time since the movie was filmed to go back and say like, oh, this is what happened. But it's like that, like trying to convert someplace that doesn't seem too
accessible.
Like, accessible
to tourists.
Or yeah, it didn't seem like at the time of whenever they were filming it didn't seem like a touristy type place. It literally the scenes were like basically from what it made it seem, and obviously this could just be what the movie was making it seem like the entire town farmed mantas and that's all that they did. Like it was showing like when like the fishermen came in, it would show all like the kids running out and gathering. It made it seem like this is all that they did.
Yeah, this is literally the industry.
Yeah,
this is the reason why this town is here.
Yeah. So, so whether or not that's true, but it's like they kind of have taken that away from them, and like I said, while it's good that they have provided them with an alternative, it wasn't like, it wasn't them saying, oh, you should try doing this instead. It was saying, like, we've taken this first thing away from you, so now you have to do this or figure something else out for yourself. Yeah.
And who knows what kind of watchdog system's in place. Perhaps they just made the rays more valuable, and the village will continue to do that because now the price that they're going to get for them is even higher. Mm. Who knows? Yeah. But yeah, it's just so much left unexplored, and I don't know if it's necessarily a responsibility of the film to explore every angle, just like we were talking about how it's not Plant Pyramid Nation's job to talk extensively about environmental impact or ethics, or, you know, it's not, every film doesn't have to be everything.
Yeah.
So, but it's just like, yeah, it was this thing where I'm just like having this amazing experience of all these other things going on. And even the photography, you know, during these village segments is just, it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful location.
Yeah.
And then there's this thing just in the back of your head where you're like, I'm not sure how I should feel about this. Cause it's like the change isn't coming from within the community. It's coming from these sort of, you know, missionaries or these colonialists. And it's tricky.
It's tricky because it's like I was saying to you, it seems like it's a good change. It seems like making it illegal to hunt the mantas is a good thing. And it's like, hopefully, like you said, that it's a possibility. Hopefully it doesn't make them more valuable and they just don't continue to do this. And like, you would hope that they are able to figure something else out. But, I don't know. It seems like it could have very well put all of like a large community of people into like a downward spiral of like, well, what are we going to do now to survive?
Yeah. And if it's just, you know, I feel the danger of like, this comes into play when people talk about like, well, what will cow farmers do if everyone goes vegan? And, you know, my sort of initial gut reaction is like, well, no one deserves to make a living off of the death of another being. No one deserves to make a living from something that we deem unethical. And it's like, oh, but they could just go grow produce instead. And this seems like for them, it's a situation where they don't have that option.
They literally said it.
Yeah. And, it's really tough because I can feel that a lot of people within the vegan community and also just the American, I'll just say American community population at large, because they're kind of, the film is kind of other, even though they do very much humanize them, it still is in a position to be like, look at these other people doing this thing. And so you know, American people love cats and dogs and horses and rabbits to some extent. And look at those barbarians eating dogs in this other country. And it just seems like a lot of people would just go, well, good. It doesn't matter that they're put in this position because they shouldn't be killing these animals. And I can, you know, that's something that I see a lot of vegans, you know, spouting off as well. And again, I can't say that anyone deserves to make a living off of the death of another being, but also it's how you handle the situation. Like, I don't know. I'll say it again. It's tricky.
Yeah. And it's like, I wouldn't want them to make their living off of that because it like can't be, cause there's a pretty powerful scene where they go on one of the boats to hunt one of the mantas. And it's just like, I mean, obviously if like, this is your life, then it's like, you're used to doing this. But when it shows them like killing the mantas, it's almost just, and like,
and they say it's an hour-long death.
Yeah.
Like, it's brutal.
That's what I mean. It just seems like it would take, like, a toll on you just being around, like, that much death all the time.
Yeah.
It just doesn't seem like it could be healthy.
Something that I'm wondering that the film didn't really say, but they talked about how mantas didn't used to have much profit, and then they kind of came into vogue because of the gills being, you know, said to have some medicinal properties. So I'm wondering what the village was doing before that, or if before that they were in a position where they didn't need to make money. I don't really know what the timeline of the film was.
That's true. I did not think about that at all.
And then also it was interesting because the other conundrum with the whole thing, and they had a fisherman reflecting on this towards the end of the film, in that, well, if they keep fishing these animals the way that they are, they will no longer have them to fish. You know, it's not sustainable what they're doing. And so, and another thing the film didn't necessarily say, maybe I have to rewatch it, is their depletion of their species is caused entirely by their fishing, or is there also environmental factors? Because the film talks a lot about environmental factors and how this is really bad for all these species and how the ocean's acidifying and that destroys, like, I don't want to say shellfish, but animals with shells. Didn't necessarily say crabs, but... how it's like killing all these species. So it's like, is any of their decline as a species due to the environmental effects? And if so, then that burden falls on those countries that are consuming the most animal products. You know, even though the film kind of lets American audiences off the hook. I know these are just unanswered questions that I either did not pick up from the film or they did not address. I think they didn't address them.
Yeah. And do you think that, the fact that one of the guys in the village does say, like, if we kept doing this, it's like there would be none left. Does that make it more okay for what the filmmakers did, knowing that it's like they had to stop hunting them now, or they were going to have to stop hunting them in 10 years anyways when they just were none left?
So at least now when they're stopping, they still have, they're still left. Yeah. I mean, the fisherman's solution was to kill less of them, significantly less of them. But is and that way that's quote unquote sustainable fishing, if there is such a thing. But if they have to kill them at a much lower rate, is that going to provide the level of income that the town needs?
Yeah,
you know, it didn't appear to be an incredibly wealthy town, so it's not like they're like making billions of dollars. And okay, we'll kill a third less and will only make, you know, 1 billion instead of, you know, 3 billion, whatever it might be. So I don't know. These are all unanswered questions for me.
I'm sure someone in that chain of production is making a lot of money, and it's not them.
Mostly. Because they were saying they got, like, $6 for each of the gills.
Oh, did they?
And then they had those rings, which I'm not sure where on their bodies they came from, but they're like, a set of these is $20. Oh, I don't know what that translates to for their currency.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a lot of money. But yeah, I mean, if we're looking at how things typically go, someone's making a lot of money that's not the people that are actually killing the animals.
And this, and again, it's like, I think that the movie did an okay job in like humanizing the people that were doing this, because another thing that I think we must have talked about this before, just kind of blaming like factory farm, the workers there.
Yeah.
Just kind of when you see like videos of what happens on the farms, and just immediately saying like, oh, it's these people in these videos, like these are the problems. Like, we just need to get these people in jail and that's it. Because that's again something it's easy for people to fall into that, because everyone wants to blame someone that's not themselves. So if you're someone that consumes these things, it's easy to blame the person that's actually doing the literal killing, as opposed to the person that's doing the consuming. So I think that this, at least with the people in Indonesia, I think it did an okay. The people in China, maybe less so. It did make them kind of seem like the villains of the movie when it was a lot of scenes of people saying like, no, don't come in, like, don't come in here, get out of here.
Yeah.
That was a little like villainizing.
Yeah.
Is this, I don't know if that's a word, villainizing. But
I think so.
Yeah. Like, so that, yeah. Although it did, they did show a little segment of some like ad. It was like an anti-shark fin soup ad with Yao Ming, and that was like, that was putting it on the consumer, so like that was nice.
Yeah,
it wasn't so I don't know. I think that this movie was, I think it was pretty balanced, like it maybe besides not having enough American stuff.
Yeah, it just, you know, I mean, how long can they make the film? How much can they cover? Obviously, they're really focused on oceans, mm-hmm. and they place some pretty big heft on what animal agriculture does to the oceans, but it just felt like such a short thing, and it's kind of like what value is there really in footage of them exploring these, you know, underground black market things when they could have maybe been devoting that time towards just explaining just how horrible the standard American diet is for these marine animals that we're learning to care about. Even though, again, those scenes of them exploring these areas and getting kicked out, and it's exhilarating to watch. Just such a fun experience to watch.
That is what I was gonna say. Well, that's what I was gonna say to that.
That's the value.
I think that is the value of it, is that it's like going to make people want to watch this more. I will say though, it's like, and I don't know that much about fishing, like the fishing industry, but it would seem like there would be fish that Americans consume that are also, like, it seems like overfishing is a problem that is closer to home for Americans, not just fishing like exotic animals, just fishing like, I don't know about fish or which types of fish are either overpopulating or endangering other species, but it would seem like they could have related that, because a lot of Americans eat fish, and because they were so passionate about fish, I think they could have tied that into U.S. a little better. But honestly, the only reason I even know a little bit about this is because whenever we go to Mia's, it's like I know that they only serve fish. They serve specific fish for specific reasons.
Yes.
And because the majority of sushi places aren't doing that, that leads me to believe that there is some issue with that.
Yeah, I know one of the fish that they kind of single out is bluefin tuna.
As not serving?
As not serving. Okay. Because that's like just, you know, we're wiping them out. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's like, are these whales and manta rays and sharks just like a sexier, you know, issue and like a more appealing, more exotic animal for people to care about than a bluefin tuna? Bluefin tuna doesn't look all that cool, I mm-hmm. guess, compared to a manta ray.
But
this weird, like, penguin birds flying through the sea. This
movie makes every animal look beautiful.
even plankton. Yeah. Microorganisms in plankton. Yeah. It's like, okay, yeah, why focus on these exotic animals and not the ones that... Why, you know, if the guy is so concerned with his carbon footprint and flying out halfway across the world, why not focus on something that's a little more local to the United States? Mm. You know, and that's... I don't want it to sound like I'm like, well, why don't you do this instead of that? Because people do that all the time with like vegan activists. But it's just like something to ponder mm-hmm. why certain choices were made.
Again, I think it seems like this person is very passionate about mantas and sharks.
Yeah.
Like it seems like he's passionate about the environment and about animals, but like a very, very burning passion about those two species. And he just wanted to make a movie about those, which I don't blame him, because I think it's an issue that we don't think about too much, so it's important that it gets some exposure.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I will say that, you know, as I mentioned earlier, vegan advocacy groups focus almost exclusively on farmed animals. Mm-hmm. So it is cool to learn about and see the plight of other animals, even if they are being, on some level, they're almost farmed, or they're being, you know, harvested, quote unquote, for things that people consume, even if it's just in like ground up powdered pill form. But mm-hmm. I did like that. It kind of widened the scope.
Yep.
I guess I just wish that it connected it back to veganism more, so that people would understand that vegan is more than just diet, or more than just pigs and cows and mm-hmm. turkeys and stuff.
I think the thing that what they were trying to do with the very end of the movie, the last thing they says, it says, find your one thing, hashtag find your thing. I think what they were trying to say was, it's like, maybe it's like, you want to be in, like, you need to do something. There's like a lot of messed up stuff that's going on. It's like, find the thing that you can do to help improve this situation. And I wish they had pushed a little more, but I think for a lot of people, that thing could be like eating less meat or eating less seafood or going vegan or vegetarian. But
Go ahead.
I was going to say, but they also talk about like solar energy and they talk about like carbon emissions and stuff like that. So I think they're opening up, which is not necessarily a terrible thing. They're saying like the world needs a lot of help, like do something to help it, which is not bad. Like that's not a bad thing. And that's why it's like, I don't think I want to look at this movie as like a vegan movie, like the way that Plant Pure Nation or Earthlings is. I'm not going to look at it as a vegan movie. Because I don't think that that's what their goal was. I think their goal was to drive you to do something. And whatever that is, it's something that's going to improve the planet.
Yeah. No, I would definitely agree. It's not a vegan movie per se, even though it is very well much related to. And I believe the suggestion they give is not to eat meat or cheese one day a week. So it's kind of like a meatless Monday.
Oh, they do say that. They
kind of make a plea for a meatless, cheeseless Monday. Mm-hmm. No mention of eggs, but maybe eggs are far down on the environmental impact scale. I do love that little moment at the end, and I like that they have like a it's not ultra specific call to action, but it's like a realistic call to action, not necessarily Meatless Monday, but just the fact that they're like, there's all these horrible things, find your thing that you can do and go do it. And that's, you know, that's like the best advice. It's like, find something simple that you can do that's sustainable for you to keep doing it and just do it at a healthy pace for you that you're not going to burn out on. And so I did really appreciate that. And that's something that's missing from so many films is like a powerful and doable call to action.
Yeah.
And this movie had it. So I did really like that aspect of it.
It seemed very unintimidating. Like the find your thing, find your one thing,
just
right?
One thing, damn it.
So it's like, which is awesome. It's like, it's so, like I said, it's so unintimidating for people to get into that, which is so important.
Absolutely.
So, what was your favorite part?
That's really hard. I actually really loved when they had like the microorganisms that they're showing on the screen, and there's one that looked kind of like a little crab, and he's picking at his face a little bit, and it was just, I don't know, just the visuals of the film. I sat there in awe, and I kind of wish that I could have seen that on like an IMAX or a big screen. And I mean, the sound design was great, and it was exciting, and I really do wish I could have seen it on a much larger format.
I bet it has to be playing somewhere because it's like a Discovery Channel thing.
It was free on Discovery Channel, so. Yeah. But TV now is the same level of quality as movies, but it's like a cinematic level experience.
Mm-hmm. My favorite part was there was a photographer that they interview and stuff that just, he has a project, I forget what it's called. It's like something arc, animal arc or something like that. Where he's just trying to photograph like every species, and he photographs a lot of species that are either going extinct or have gone extinct.
Or are the last one.
Yeah.
According to him.
Yeah. Yeah. He photographs a frog that he says is the last one of that species.
Good looking frog.
Yeah. And, it's like, I love looking at photographs of animals and stuff like that, but he was just like a phenomenal photographer, and it's like the pictures, it showed a lot of his pictures and his process of doing it, and it was just like, it blew my mind.
Yeah. And I actually just really liked that because you could see this sort of quiet desperation in his life where he's like, nobody cares, and this is just me desperately trying to bring attention to these animals. And the film, I feel like, could run the risk of being like, well, who cares. But they do a good job of showing why this photography matters. And, oh, I got this bird on the cover of this magazine, and we increased the funding from, like, $30,000 to, like, $1.3 million.
Yeah.
Part of me is like, so much good could be done with that $1.3 million. But it's like, okay, the importance of promoting these animals and just exposure and all that stuff is very clearly outlined in the film. So you're like, I get why they've made a film that uses this type of photography, and it was great.
Yeah, no, it was an awesome movie. Go see it. Go watch this movie.
Yeah, if you have a Discovery Channel, I'm sure it's probably re-airing on there. Yeah. You can, if you got Xbox or whatever service you have.
On Xfinity. It was on demand on Xfinity. Okay. For free if you have Xfinity. So.
Yeah. And if not, I would actually say it's worth paying the, you know, $15 to buy it on, you know, buy the digital copy or.
Yeah, I might buy the DVD. I might buy that goddamn DVD.
You know, I would love to see some special features about how they, you know, even more about the photography and how they.
There was a special feature section on that.
Oh, shit. Sweet. Well, I think we'll leave it there. Then we'll go watch some special features without you.
Yeah. So definitely go see it and let us know what you think about it. That the part about the Indonesian village, that's definitely, I think, the part that some people would find objectionable, and we'd love to hear what you think about it.
Yeah, please, you know, write in, let us know what you think. We love getting your feedback, and this is especially a morally complicated issue. So,
which I think they do an okay job in, like, saying that. At least to begin with, they say, like...
I feel like they could have done a better job, could've. But...
But at least they say it. At least they... It's not just like, we came in here, now these people don't do that anymore, and they don't even mention the fact that it's like, that's what's happening.
So, and this is all, you know, we just watched the movie and then immediately walked over here and started talking about it. So, yep. Would love to hear other people's opinions on the subject. So, write in. What's the email, Paul?
TheBeardedVegans@gmail.com.
All right.
So that's all we got for this week. Andy, did you want to say where you're going to be again?
Yeah, I'll be at the Arizona Veg Food Fest, which is in Scottsdale, Arizona, January 9th and 10th. I'll be behind the Compassion Company table.
Very nice.
And beyond that, I'm just going to be chilling in California for the rest
lucky
January, February, and up through March 20th at the Vegan Street Fair. So if you live anywhere between like San Francisco and San Diego and want to hang out or tell me where to eat, tell me where a good beach is.
You going to San Diego?
I'm going to San Diego.
I went to this one place. It was Mexican food.
Pokies?
No. I went there with my family and it was so good. We went the next, like there was like, I was Happy Cat in the, obviously San Diego, there's tons of vegan places, but it was so good. We just went back there the next day and I was just like, this is the best I've ever had.
Nice. Well,
but I can't remember the name. So
yeah, shit out of luck. Never going to look it up. Don't know how to use Happy Cat or Google. So I guess I'll just die not having this Mexican food.
All right. Anything else, Andy?
All I have to say, Paul, is we are the Bearded Vegans. Signing off.